You are listening to Teacher Talk here on killradio.org. And today's host is Mark Hempel. Take it away, teacher.
Good afternoon, everyone. You are listening to Teacher Talk on Kill Radio. If you feel like calling in at any time, same call-in numbers, 213-252-0998. That's 213-252-0998. I'm in today for Nick Richard, who should be back with us, I believe, on the 14th, at least by the latest reports. I'll also be joined later as a co-host by David Garcia. He was with us 2 weeks ago. He should be returning today. I'd like to start off today with a little review. If you were listening last week, you know that our main guest speaker was Neil Chertkov, and he was, for the most part, exposing as much corruption as he sees it within the Los Angeles Unified School District and the United Teachers of Los Angeles. He also was promoting a DVD that's put out by the political slate that he's associated with, which is SAVE. The title of that DVD was Save Our Schools, which goes into detail through interviews with individuals with expertise in the area on just how corrupt the district is and the union and how they work in collusion. You can still get yourself a copy of that DVD by emailing at fmartin6@yahoo.com. That's fmartin6@yahoo.com. All right, let's take a look at the news. There are a couple of things that have been happening which should be of interest to us. Another interview for Warren Fletcher. You remember a short time ago he was interviewed by the Times, and it looks like another one's come around again, this time by Connie Janos. He was described by Janos as being a very thoughtful man as compared to Duffy. And that was emphasized over and over again, that he wasn't gruff and belligerent the way Duffy was. He was more of the polite nature and reasonable in demeanor. Once again, he was praised for using metaphors while citing the classics from literature. Seems to be something that it's a regular part of his presentation, at least based on this interview and the previous. He was also described as being very serious and substantive and intellectual by all means. His expressed mode of operation was that he doesn't rant or raves, but he knows what's important, and that's what he's trying to emphasize for teachers. So far, I'm still waiting to hear him say exactly what that is that he knows that's important to teachers. Been a little short on that or a little shy, so really can't say what's going on there for sure. The only thing I can add to that is, since he's so fond of quoting the classics, I have one for him from the satirist, the Roman satirist Flaccus. It goes this way, at pulchrum est, dicio monstrar et dicir hic est. And it applies directly to Mr. Fletcher, because in translation it means, oh, what a wonderful and pleasant thing it is to be among the crowd and have everyone turn and point at you and say, why, that's the man. That would seem so far to be the personality that I'm getting on Warren Fletcher based on these interviews. And as far as that self-effacing character, I would say this about it. Another Roman historian, Sallustus, once said, esse quodam videre bonus malebat, which means, and it's a good lesson for Mr. Fletcher, he preferred to actually be a good man rather than to just take on the appearances of one. Well, if Mr. Fletcher's listening, I hope that he takes that advice to heart. Now, moving on in issues, something else interesting. David has just joined us here, so co-host is here. David, would you like to say hi to everyone?
Thank you, Mark. It's great to be back.
Oh, glad to have you. Moving on. David, you missed our coverage of the last Warren Fletcher interview. We've done another one, but let's move on here. Also on the web, there was a tribute to Rigoberto Ruelas in Education Week Teacher. If you don't recall, he's the teacher that unfortunately or sadly took his own life due to having been given a public evaluation in which it was determined that he wasn't meeting the standards or the needs of his teachers. In other words, he wasn't producing enough progress. He was a teacher that spent an awful lot of time in and out of the classroom, all dedicated to teaching, very dedicated to his students. So I guess he took this to heart, and it was more than he could take. Now, it's interesting that one of the political insiders who shall remain unnamed, although you know who you are, Ingrid, but yet shall remain unnamed, Ingrid, She happens to sit on the Progressive Educators for Action Committee, which is better known as PEAK, which basically does a fantastic job of suppressing any real activism and resistance on the part of teachers. Every time there's a proposal that would suggest that the union get off their behinds, their collective behinds, and actually do something rather than just talking the talk, she manages to put that down. Good job on that, Ingrid. She's also a member of the Political Action Council of Educators, or PACE, which is the same committee, which manages to donate a significant part of the money that all you dues-paying teachers make to those politicians in Sacramento, primarily Democrats. Yes, those same Democrats who vote to reduce your salaries, to reduce the number of teachers, to make it easier for principals to fire teachers, and you know all those good things that go along with that. She talked about the district in only one critical sense, and that is the BS about everyone being able to college, being able to go to college. Now, I do agree with that, that is BS, that the idea that everyone's going to go to college, and it's not necessary, but if you're going to point out that BS, then cut your own BS and start defending the membership. Stop covering for a union which, for the most part, demonstrates nothing but collusion with the district to its own advantage, at least that of the higher officers.
Mark, if I can just add my own two cents into that, that's not all that they do. They also have great catering during the House of Representative meetings. I mean, I've gone there and had falafels, gone there and had, like, gourmet meals, which I guess is where the $57 a month the student union fees are being submitted to, because I don't really see any action going on other than that.
So that's where those legends about those meals come from. They're actually true.
They are true.
Well,
quite tasty, too. Last time I was thinking of taking my family just so that they can, really get some. I take them to, fast food restaurants. I don't think in my lifetime I've ever experienced something as, delicious as lamb falafel and rice pilaf the way that they had there catered at the House of Rep meeting. So that's why Ingrid and the rest of those people are in collusion together. It's just because they're trying to... I don't know. Maybe the MSGs and the food is making them slow.
Wow. Have you brought in your own Tupperware or anything like that?
No, I was going to stuff my pockets, but...
Well, when I was in school, one of the things we used to do, college I'm referring to, is we would go to a smorgasbord, and we'd bring those vegetable bags that you get in the supermarket, the plastic ones, and load those up, shove them in our pockets before we left.
Yeah.
Not that I'm suggesting that as a means of operation to anyone. That's only said for the purpose of entertainment.
Yeah.
It is not a recommendation.
Yeah.
But moving on to more serious issues, this month the UTL Leadership Conference takes place at La Quinta. It's interesting that everything I've read on the web has been a serious effort to choke out any voice of dissent. I mean, any call to action. Anyone who wants to go to that, who wants to really spark something, one way or another, they're sidelined or they're given the status that they may attend, but they cannot speak. In other words, they could only be independent listeners. Or if they want to attend, they will do so at their own expense. That goes for transportation, meals, lodgings, and all of that. So that's not a very good registration of what the democratic process, something like that.
Yeah.
Lastly, something came into me yesterday that I thought I'd share with every one of you. Last week, Francisco Martinez phoned in and shared his thoughts as Neil Chertkov was speaking, and he was very informative. Well, it comes to pass as of yesterday that, like David, Francisco's brother was riffed.
That's terrible.
Now, here's the difference, though, which makes this unique. David had the opportunity to list himself as a priority sub. He chose not to. Francisco's brother, when he received his RIF notice, contacted the district to let them know that he would like to register as a priority sub. He was informed at that time that the RIFing was an error. Does that sound like good news? It wasn't.
Wow.
It was actually a termination.
Wow.
Now, that, not to sponsor conspiracy theories, but that does spark some interest here. Francisco is one of the driving forces behind that DVD, Save Our Schools.
Yeah.
He's been an outspoken critic of the union now for as far back as I can remember, and an even more outspoken critic of the district. And a big promoter of substitute teachers, protecting their rights and their jobs. There's something strange about this, unless you can show me that there is a significant numbers who had of teachers who experience the same set of circumstances. In other words, they were either riffed and later informed they were terminated or outright terminated rather than being given the opportunity to serve as subs. Remember, these are all veteran teachers. These aren't newbies.
Yeah, well, Mark, it sounds to me like retaliation, or I don't know if the word is retribution, but I think it's the district getting back its pound of flesh off of Francisco for all the advocacy he does for the teachers.
And when you say that, the only thing I can say is, with the exceptions of maybe Clint Eastwood, Antonio Banderas, and Jehovah, I know of no one that's as akin to retribution as LA Unified.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just the way they are.
Yeah.
Now, I want to move on here because David, as I mentioned earlier, started a series of subjects last week, or I'm sorry, 2 weeks ago, which... Well, he meant to finish, but we had so many callers that added to it that he never got a chance to do that. We want to give him the chance to do that. And we also have a speaker today around 12:30 or so. That would be Jenny Cook of Jenny Cooks and foodforlunch.org. She can tell us a lot about efforts toward food distribution, better nutrition, especially as it pertains to our schools, and we know how well that's gone over. But until she does, I'd like to turn the mic over to David. We may have to interrupt somewhere along the line when she does phone in, but we need to return to what he's saying so we can get the full spectrum of what he would like to share with us. David, would you like to take over?
Thank you, Mark. I appreciate it. First thing I want to say is that, you know, this is so important. KillRadio.org. I thank Mark for having me on, and I thank Nick Richard, who is still on vacation, for asking me to sit in. You know, I want to tell all our listeners, you got to help us promote KillRadio.org. We really have to get people out active and out there. We have to be proactive about what's going on in our community, in our world, and the only way to do that is to really drive up listenership. So I want to ask you, for all those listeners out there, please, you know, tell as many people you have, friends, colleagues, relatives, what have you, listen to KillRadio.org. You know, it's really a public service that this radio station provides, because it's giving you a realistic and honest look at what's going on in the second largest school district in the nation. Now, having said that, I want to thank Mark for letting me take over. And Mark, I want to tell you that you feel free to interject any at your, you know, at your
discretion.
Yeah, thank you. All right. You know, one of the things that I want to talk about before we get into what we were talking about 2 weeks ago is I want to say that Warren Fletcher, there was a piece about him. I think it was in the LA Times, also in the Daily News. And I don't know if Mark, so I was out of town last time. I don't know if you guys had talked about that.
I discussed the one that came out of the Times, and today we discussed, just before you came in, we finished discussing the one by Canianos.
Okay, for Daily News. You know, one of the things that struck me from those articles was that Warren Fletcher said, he made it a point to call the superintendent of Los Angeles Unified School District Dr. Deasy. And he made it a point to say that Dr. Deasy was his boss and therefore he was going to be respectful. Now, while I respect Warren Fletcher, I disagree with that approach utterly. I mean, as UTLA president, Warren Fletcher has one boss, and that's the 45,000 members paying his monthly salary. And those are the people, the constituency that he has to advocate for. So in my opinion, for him to say that Dr. Deasy is his boss, I mean, that shows a very poorly thought way of addressing him. You know, I mean, he could have said, hey, look, we're going to work hand in hand to try to solve some of the problems in our district. But to suggest that he was his boss means that he's going to yield to his whim, if you will. And I don't know. I don't see that as a leadership. I see that as a continuation of the A.J. Duffy regime. You know, it's almost like assembly line car parts. You know, you pull one part out and you put another part in, and it's the same old situation. So now that we don't have A.J. Duffy and Warren Fletcher's been put into place, while there are differences in his approach to addressing people, I mean, it still sounds like it's going to be a union based on concessions instead of advocacy for our schools, for our children, and for our members. And it's very upsetting.
David, did you get a chance to see the interview that Kanianos did?
No, I just saw the LA Times.
Well, what's interesting in that, which relates directly to you, is Fletcher remarked about Duffy offering him advice on various levels. The only effective advice that I remember him passing on to Fletcher was this, which apparently Fletcher has declined. Duffy told him, be your own man.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I don't. Maybe he didn't understand what that meant. And, you know, I want to. It's not that I'm trying to stir up, you know, controversy in our community. It's not that I'm trying to be divisive. I'm not trying to cause factions and cause into squabbling. But, you know, when you have people like John Crumshaw, who I respect, although I have to admit, I respect. He seems very professional. He's very, you know, cordial, polite. But, you know, he had on KPFK, as I was, he had the superintendent along with Greg Sulkovitz and Betty Forrester. And they were going to have a sit-down, and they were going to discuss, I guess, public education. You know, I'm not particularly religious. I'm not trying to promote a religion. But even the Bible said, I think there's a quote in there somewhere, that have nothing to do with the enemy. You know, that Jehovah or God is not going to sit down with Satan and have dinner with him. I mean, and that's like one of the oldest lessons that there is. Do not conspire with your enemies. And I don't understand how Greg Sulkovitz or Betty Forrester will sit down with the superintendent with John Crumshaw and then sit there, and I don't know what they're doing, but it's really, to me, that shows incompetence. It shows a lack of leadership, and it shows that they're willing to allow the district to bend our will towards the district. And it shouldn't be that way, because, and again, Mark, you can step in anytime you want.
Well, the only thing I would say about that is this. I would ask you a question. When you look at the personalities that you've just named, the three people, it's like they're speaking one voice.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I would have to question about that is this. To my knowledge, and I think I could verify this if I needed to, but to my knowledge, John Crumshaw is on union per diem.
See, you know what? If that were true, then I would say that reflects a conflict of interest. I mean, you can't, you know what I mean? You can't walk both sides of the fence. You know, either you're going to be objective in the matter and advocate for education, or you're going to be, you know, on the side of the UTLA administration. I don't know. Is that, can you really verify that he is in fact getting per diem for that? I mean, that would be, you know,
he unintentionally confessed it to Lenny Eisenberg.
Yeah, see, I mean, that's you know, I'm glad you mentioned that, Mark. And again, it's not a personal attack on John Crumshaw. You know, I've met him, I know him, he's a very nice gentleman and everything, but that is the duplicitous leadership that we've had with the UTLA, you know, union, Los Angeles Teachers Union, is that we have all these people that are outwardly saying, okay, we want to advocate for public education, but inwardly they're thinking, well, I want to advocate for my personal gain. And it's that personal gain that makes them sacrifice for the greater good, which is advocacy for our 45,000 members and for public education. You see, and I think I had mentioned that 2 weeks ago when I was here with Mark, is that, you know, being the second largest school district in the country and the second largest union in the country, this is the battlefield for the rest of the nation. Whatever happens here in Los Angeles will eventually happen in Iowa, will eventually happen in Ohio, and everywhere else in the country. You know, so the thing is that's why you have all these corporate people trying to come in here and dismantle the union. Because if they can break apart the second largest union of teachers in the country, then rest assured they're going to be in your backyard, you know, the next day. And that's why I'm very fervent about standing up, because we need leadership that's going to say, hey, you know, absolutely right. We have to stand up and we have to do something about this. And we cannot be in collusion with them. Like I said, I'm not talking about religion to make this a Sunday morning mass, but there's even biblical scripture that enemies don't sit and socialize with one another. They're enemies, you know? And I think that it's not that I think John Deasy is a bad person. It's not that I think Monica Garcia is a bad person. But those are people that they want to run the second largest school district like a business.
Well, it may be a comfort to you. In an interview about a month ago, John Deasy did say on Sundays, and of course this is Sunday, mm-hmm. that he sits in church praying for you.
Yes. Yes, I know. All my sins are forgiven thanks to John Deasy, you know. I would have much rather preferred that he had taken a couple of furlough days and a pay cut, and he can just keep his own prayers for his family and he. But
well,
yeah.
can you name one administrator that was I'm going to extend the metaphor here. Rift.
Yeah, no. And remember, 2 weeks ago, I think, Mark, you and I were discussing that. It's like, you know, assistant principals get an average about, what, $107,000 annual salary, I believe it was?
Yeah, depending on whether they're at an elementary or secondary.
Yeah, right. So there's what some schools have up to 7 administrators and a school dean. And it just seemed to me like, well, if you wanted to make a more prudent cuts in the school district, why would you want to cut RIF teachers that are getting an average about $56,000 annual salary? You should just maybe downscale some of the principals and bump them back to teachers, and you'll be okay because they're getting $104,000, $107,000 annual salary. It's just fiscally irresponsible, and it's just another example that you know, LAUSD, they want to incorporate some kind of, you know, for lack of a better word, they want to McDonald-ize the concept of public education.
I'd say 2 things about that make this interesting since you're bringing it up. Yeah. Now, prior to the RIFs, uh-huh. when we were all still employed,
yes,
you know, the good old days of what, a year and a half ago, LA Unified still had by a landslide the highest ratio of administrators to teachers uh-huh. and students in the country.
Yeah.
Now, with the RIFs, can you imagine how that ratio's gone up?
Yeah, yeah, it's ridiculous. And you know, I'm glad you brought that up because I wrote the new superintendent, you know, before my LAUSD email got shut down, and I had told him, hey, you know, welcome aboard. I used to write Ramon Cortinas occasionally, and I'm going to write you the same thing. And as a matter of fact, I'm going to cut and paste a note that I've been circulating for the past year and a half. And I believe, Mark, I sent you a copy of that too. And
yes, you did.
I was saying, you know, one of the things that would be prudent reform is beefing up security in our schools. I mean, when you have students that are, you know, running rampant with, you know, illegal substances on campus, and administrators tell you, oh, just let them back into class and tell them to put his head down. I mean, you know, other students in the classroom see that example, and, you know, that undermines the classroom, the teacher's authority, and it undermines the classroom management.
Well, if he was using the most appropriate illegal substance, he would eventually put his head down anyway, wouldn't he?
I guess we could say drugs, alcohol, if he was intoxicated with alcohol, that's fine. However, if it had been some other kind of, you know, methamphetamines, he probably would have been biting his own foot or something.
Probably.
Yeah. And so, see, little policies like that come down from the district leadership, that's what's affecting and that's what's compromising our education. It's not the teachers. I mean, you know, the way I see it is, you know, I don't really watch a lot of television, but if you would liken it to, you know, those mobster movies or something like that. I think I was talking to Neil Chertoff, and he gave me the idea. If the analogy was those movies like Martin Scorsese's Casino or The Godfather's whatever, I think that the administration for Los Angeles Unified School District, they're like the pit bosses. They're like the mid-level bosses or maid bosses, if you will. And they're the ones that are promoting this agenda. But again, there's something I'm really adamant about is that this agenda is coming from the federal government. And we need to unify to fight back because one of the things I had mentioned was that our rights, the rights of working class people, are being taken away. And that's the ultimate drive where this is going. You know, because I think, as a matter of fact, your friend and my friend, Lenny Eisenberg, was once telling me you need an educated populace to run a democracy. You need people that are active in the democratic process. And by taking everyone's education away, then how are they going to be able to actively participate in their democracy?
Well, by what you're saying, we're victims of extension. If you consider that, well, all politicians from the state level on up, definitely at the federal level, they're all funded by the same corporations, regardless of what party
exactly.
they represent. Yeah. It is not to excuse the district by any means at all, or the union. Mm-hmm. It is the district or the corporations which are in this drive to corporatize education, to give it over to the privateers, to the charters, which are all basically what profiteers. Now, in contrast to that, a few weeks ago when I heard, in person, I heard Ramon Cortina speaking, he said that the intention of charter schools was to develop and introduce new programs on a small scale into public school, which would be diffused into public school. In other words, charters were not supposed to take over. They were only supposed to be there using alternate methods and those that were successful, moving them into the mainstream. That must have fell to the wayside as soon as they saw the profit potential.
Well, I mean, I was going to say, I hope you didn't believe him because, you know, the LA Times just said that the Los Angeles Zoo wants to be, some people are proposing that the Los Angeles Zoo be taken over by, no longer funded, I believe, by the city or by the county or whoever it is that's the primary funder for it. They're going to want to, in essence, they're going to want to implement this charter model that is currently being forced into education in the zoo. And one of the problems that they're saying is that, look, once you bring in a private contractor to take care of the zoo, what's going to happen is the rights of the animals are going to be compromised. People are not going to be treating the animals with the same type of dignity and respect that they currently have because it's a private contractor. And so they're going to be cutting corners, compromising the quality of care just to save a buck, just to increase their profit margins. And I believe that. I absolutely believe that. I think it's a terrible idea. Now, how does that relate to us? That's this exact same thing that's going on with public education. The ultimate end game of bringing in charter schools is to cut costs, is to, like I said, McDonaldize, for lack of a better word. It's the McDonaldization of public education, you know? And that's what they're trying to do. And so it's to increase the profit margin of these people that are investing in education and making – you know what, Mark? I'll explain it like this. If they can get some crusty old professor in some university to write up a curriculum, then they figure they can get any old person fresh out of college to teach the class at a minimum level salary. So then they don't have to pay the what they feel are these ridiculous salaries for tenured teachers, which in fact are not really ridiculous at all. But it is would be a very successful cost-cutting measure. Now, the one thing that they're not considering in that equation is that when you bring in these, you know, somebody fresh out of college to read a book and do a scripted lesson for students, is that that person doesn't have the insight. That person doesn't have the human dynamic is compromised. You know, teaching isn't really about teaching. It's about relationships. It's about, and Mark, you can attest to that. You've been a teacher for quite some time. It's about establishing a relationship with the students and motivating them to learn. I mean, if you remove that from teaching, you know, then what's the point of sending your kid to public school at all? You might as well just have them sit in front of a computer and you know, memorize stuff, which is ultimately one of the other aspects that I think the school district is trying to do.
You know what, David? If let's say if we were doing exactly what you're saying, and that was our approach, we were motivating them, we were giving them something to think about.
Well, you'd probably get riffed again.
You'd probably get riffed, right? But, you know, if we did that, we probably wouldn't need the drug testing. Why would they want drugs if they were motivated?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, no, but you would probably get riffed again because, you know, because an administrator didn't come up with the idea, and you did, Mark, and you know, they would want to retaliate, of course, for that, you know. One of the other things that I disagree with, and again, Mark can attest that I've been emailing this around and circulating it for quite some time, is administrative walkthroughs. I think they're pointless. I think they do nothing for improving teacher performance. And I'm going to tell you why. I know this firsthand, because while I was at Thomas Jefferson High School, I had the greatest pleasure of working with Mr. Mark Mandich. Mr. Mark Mandich was the automotive teacher there. And, you know, I was under his tutelage or his mentorship, whatever you want to call it. But I learned so much in the time that I worked with him than I would have in any, you know, credential program. It was like team teaching, and it was really effective. You know, he took me under his wing, and I learned a great deal, and I'm grateful of that. I think that that was more productive for me than having some local superintendent from a local district come and walk through my class and say, well, your shoes are untied and you forgot to write down the date on the second chalkboard. I don't feel that that's productive at all. I think that that's one of the things that I see. We have a weak leadership in the LA Teachers Union because somebody in the teachers union should say something about that, and they don't. So they're complicit. They're either an accomplice to what's going on or they're so grossly negligent they shouldn't be, you know, representing our union. And either way you cut it, I just think it's like a moral larceny, if you will. You know, these people are not Pontius Pilate. Who was the other guy who betrayed? Judas. It's a Judas Iscariot. That's what these people are. You know, I believe they're Judas Iscariot. They're not advocating for the best interests of the union. They're not advocating for the best interests of our students. They're just trying to prolong their careers out of a classroom so that they can remain out of a classroom.
By the way, you've just exhausted my knowledge of biblical text.
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I'm kind of weary myself. You know what? We want to thank Bennett. Yeah. We want to thank Bennett for that one. Yeah, yeah. So where does that leave us? Where does that leave us? That means that we really have to, and I believe Mark and Leonard Eisenberg have been saying that we need to figure out a way to counter against all this. And the best way, I mean, they were suggesting is that we kind of promote some day where we walk out, like on a norm day. For those of you that don't know that are listening, that is a day during the school year when students are counted and tallied, and then that gets sent, I guess, to Sacramento or somewhere, and that's how the school will allot its funds for the year. So I guess the counter would be, hey, look, if we have students walk out on that day, now we'll start affecting the establishment where it hurts the most, and that's in their bank accounts, in their pockets. That seems to pretty much raise eyebrows anywhere you go. And while I agree with that, you know, technically, we can't be advocating for such a thing like that because it's illegal. I guess it would have been illegal if we were still teachers, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Evidently, because we've been riffed, we can promote something like that, and it's not a conflict of interest, or it's not the it isn't a criminal. I don't know. We're not in violation of any law, if you will. But I think we need to do something more than that. I think we need to talk about, like I said, I'm not the type of person to want to waste my time with you know, these mid-level bosses. I brought a couple of facts myself. I wanted to tell you that Apple Corporation just came out. I was reading, I think it was this AP, how it has those little blurbs on Yahoo, that Apple Corporation has more money than the U.S. federal government. Can you believe that? Apple Corporation has $76 billion, while the – I mean, this is in money and I forget liquidity. I'm not sure what it's called.
Right. And, you know, in light of that, Dave, do you think we should do what the federal government did in the first depression? What was that? 1876.
Yeah.
Okay. When the federal government just borrowed from the big corporations.
Yeah.
Maybe we need to do that.
Yeah.
Float alone.
Yeah. Well, see, exactly. I don't see what. So Apple has more money than the federal government. The federal government only has $74 billion, while Apple alone. You know, this is not counting Bill Gates, Warren Buffett, or any of these other people. But just the Apple Corporation on its own already has $76 million in comparison to the federal government's 74.
Now, Bill Gates at his peak before everything crashed, I remember he was reported at $56 billion.
Yeah. So, I mean, so there are so many ways, and yet we can't have – both houses can't seem to come to agreement on how to fix the debt crisis that we're having, or, you know, agree upon the debt ceiling. Is that what it is?
That's what it is.
You know, and that's what I'm saying. How does that affect our public education locally here in Los Angeles? Well, you know, let me explain how. Yesterday I had the pleasure of taking my daughters and my son to Pio Pico Park and Pico Rivera, or Pico Rivera. And one of the things was that Pio Pico Park is a mansion of the last Mexican governor of California, Pio Pico. You know, that park it's a resource. I mean, it's historic. It's an adobe house. They have examples of how you can make adobe brick building for students, for kids. It's so many resources, and it's a shame that we were talking to Julie Aguilar. Julie Aguilar, who I guess is the director or the curator of the facility, was telling me that you know, Pio Pico Park is one of these state historic sites that are on a short list to be shut down. They're on a short list of 70 historic sites to be shut down. How is it that we don't have enough money to fund a historic site like the Pio Pico Mansion in Pico Rivera, and we don't have enough money to fund school teachers, but we can send students to war in Afghanistan, Iraq, you know, we can bomb Libya. and we can go into Syria. I think that that's unfair.
Did you stay on the line? I'll bring you on.
I think that that's illegal, and I really feel that that's something that we need to do about. I'm aware that Mark had a guest caller calling in, which is outstanding, but I wanted to promote an idea of why don't we all call State Secretary Hillary Clinton and leave an angry voicemail in her message. And I was also thinking of doing the same thing with Secretary of Education Arnold Duncan. I was able to get their phone numbers, and actually I wanted to call them during the studio, but because we have a guest, I believe that we're going to turn it over right now to Mark. But I do want to say, please get out a pencil or a pen. The number for Secretary Hillary Clinton is, and this is her direct office line, it's area code 202-647-4000. If that one doesn't work, the other one that should work is also area code 202-647-5291. Now, again, that's the phone number for Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. Area code 202-647-5291. Let me just give you Arnold Duncan's phone number, and then I'll turn it over to Mark. Arnold Duncan, who is the Secretary of Education, his phone number is area code 202-401-3000. And I've called that number before. He will actually get his voicemail. So again, Arnold Duncan, area code 202-401-3000. Call these people and tell them you heard it here on killradio.org. Tell them you heard it from Mark Campbell and David Garcia. Tell them that, you know, everything we've been talking about, and say that you don't want that anymore. We want to fund education. We want to fund our state historic sites. We don't want to send our children to combat. And I can go on and on. With that, I'll let my dear friend Mark take over.
Okay, can you hear us, Jenny?
Yes.
Oh, okay, very, very good. We have Jenny Cook on the line from Jenny Cook's and foodforlunch.org. And I do know a little about those operations, but not anywhere near as much as you do. Could you fill us in on, this is Get to Know You, who you are and what you do.
Okay, my name is Jenny Cook, and I am first and foremost a mother in Los Angeles. I have three grown kids. My youngest is 18. I've been a caterer for 26 years. I've had a restaurant for 11 years in Culver City. I am a dedicated food advocate. I closed the restaurant 3 years ago, and part of my recovery of being a restaurant owner was having extra time on my hands, so I was able to jump full-time into the volunteer work that I cherish and love with food advocacy. I started with the 24th Street Garden School. I created their culinary program, and then I created a survival skills cooking class for teenagers called the Mystery Lunchbox, which I take into high schools. And then last summer, we birthed Food for Lunch because getting to know many people in the food advocacy community, I received a call from one of my friends. He said, you need to go to the board meeting tomorrow. They're talking about the budget for the food budget, the overall budget, and expressly food. And I went, and I sent out an email to my people. I have about a 4,000-person email list. And two other people showed up, and we rattled and ranted about the quality of the food. And as a side note, stopped the Tyson contract for a few months, even though it is back in the mix now. At the time, they had issues with the unfair labor practices at Tyson. And Steve Zimmer, one of the board members, was very much keen on working with companies that treated their employees well. So that was sort of the sidebar. And then one of the women called me the next day, Rebecca Crane, MD. She's a pediatrician at Kaiser, and she said, well, maybe we should get together. So we got together, and we birthed this little grassroots coalition called Food for Lunch. And she is a parent at Micheltorena, she and her husband, Jordan Crane. And they had she's the head of the PTA, and she was getting the garden program going, and she's also a pediatrician. So her hands were full. So basically they left me we had already set up the blog. Jordan had set up the blog for us. So basically with the blog and the email list and getting the word out, I created a little movement that was pretty much responsible for getting the chocolate milk out of the schools. So it just goes to show you what happens when you follow your heart. That's my story.
Now, are you associated with any of the other food advocacy groups? Because I've seen a list of them, which is, I mean, recently, and there are quite a few groups that are operating in the Los Angeles area that I think virtually no one knows about. I mean, if you're media oriented, of course you know about the Jamie Oliver Food Revolution, but there are many others that are operating that no one's even noticing.
Yes, we all know each other. It may seem like a lot of groups, but it's really not that many, and we are growing our numbers, but at the same time, it's not a priority for so very many people. They really accept the status quo of the food system. So although we are not specifically associated with any of the groups, we are friends with all of them.
So you know John and Monty then?
I don't know John and Monty.
Oh, well, he was on our show, let's see, 2 weeks ago, and he intervened in his normal activities. Now, I don't remember exactly who he's a, well, I could probably find it, but I don't remember offhand exactly who he's associated with, but I know he was on his way to Santa Monica. He's with Revolutionary Autonomous Communities, and in Santa Monica, he was stopping at a bakery to pick up bread, which is part of their food distribution program.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know how many other people they have participating or how many types of food they actually provide, but I know they do food distribution.
Yeah, so I don't know everybody, but I do know many.
Very interesting, though. How are you organized? I'm curious as to that.
Well, this has been very much Mark waking up and following my heart and figuring out what to do each day. I don't have any training as a community leader. I am trained permaculture, so I have the skills to figure things out. And basically, it was me and an email list and the blog all year. And we had maybe two meetings. I'm over in Echo Park, Silver Lake area, so it was largely based, fortunately, the majority of the parents that started the group were in the Silver Lake area. So we haven't really, at this point, the list for Food for Lunch is probably around 200, 300 people strong, and we are all over the city. And what's been able to happen since the Jamie Oliver Food Revolution came to town, they really aligned all of us so that we were able to meet, a lot of the other food working groups.
Have you had a lot of interaction with them?
Well, the Jamie Oliver people organized two meetings, and now the Los Angeles Food Policy Task Force, we had a meeting at the 24th Street Garden with some key players to try to figure out, what direction to take next. So it's, at this point it's summer. I'm enjoying taking some time off from the work and trying to figure out what to do with next year.
You can answer a question for me then. In this process, were there any obstacles that you had to surmount?
So there were obstacles every day of every week. It's the system is so entrenched in the bureaucracy of it all. We started, I guess, July, end of July, beginning of August, and then in September they had, because we were screaming so much, they had cafeteria improvement committee meetings the second Monday of the month, and then they also established menu direction meetings, and those were Tuesday and Wednesday four times a month. So it was for 2 weeks, those 2 days. So I would organize people to go to the meetings so we all didn't have to go to all of them. But the meetings themselves were very bureaucratic. I mean, there was a lot of people from food services, and then there were parents and advocacy groups trying to negotiate the flow of change. And we came up against a lot of, I don't want to say ignorance, but challenges to trying to create a whole food diet for the child.
So the hierarchy didn't exactly greet you with open arms.
Exactly. They were very, they, the status, and don't get me wrong, LAUSD is feeding 750 schools hot lunches. They're doing an amazing job in a very difficult situation with 75 cents a child when all is said and done. I mean, it's ridiculous. But I stand firm when I say, if we have 75 cents to give a child, why are we processing the foods? Why don't we give them whole foods? You know, why does lunch have to be hot? Why does it have to be the standard American diet? Why can't we give them cheese and bread and fruit and call it a day?
Hello, Jennifer.
So it's very entrenched. Things move very slowly because of the size of the district. And there are some very, David Binkle, for one, is very enlightened when it comes to food service. He completely understands. You know, they've based all of their menus on nutrients for years, and now, you know, current food science is saying if you eat whole foods, you get the nutrients. You don't even have to worry about the nutrients.
My co-host has a question for you too, but what I'm getting from you is you're trying to veer away from the empty carbohydrate, starch, and fat-based or trans-fat-based that exists in most school cafeterias.
Well, that's the sad diet, the standard American diet. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, even when you get to meat and dairy products, they're also overprocessed.
I wouldn't serve them meat. They're serving those kids to my animals. I it's embarrassing.
I agree with you. You wouldn't find it in dog food.
Yeah, no, it's embarrassing. Yeah.
Yeah, the level that it's at, it defies the imagination.
So why are we giving that to our children?
I wish I had an answer.
You know, these are the future leaders of America. Let's feed them well.
Well, I can give you an answer, but you're not going to like it.
Well, I know the answer too, Mark.
You know, these are all cut deals. You
know, I know.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's all there is to it.
Yeah.
Somebody's making money off of it very, very quietly. That's what it comes down to. But, you know, I wish I had a better explanation or one that was more promising. But I can't ask anybody to sing Climb Every Mountain in the background here. I mean, this is just the truth.
I know.
Here, let me turn you over to David.
Sure.
Hi, Jennifer. This is David Garcia.
Hi, David.
Hey. You know what? Mark was really patient with me. I was like squirming in my seat, you know, because you brought up a lot of great questions. One of the things that I wanted to mention was that, so I guess when Mark was trying to ask you how difficult was it, Mark is a little bit more diplomatic than I am. You know, he's been a statesman for a while. I want to know just outright how difficult did LAUSD make this process for you and, you know, try to undermine your success at this? And before I say that, I do want to mention the reason why they do that, as you said, that you and Mark both know, is the same reason they get textbooks that they never use, they get textbooks that end up being thrown away. It's contractually they're obligated to that, and, you know, they have their vendors, and I'm sure that's why they get their milk. It's subsidized. They've already agreed to it. So if you could just, and that's being the reason. So if you could just explain to us how difficult was it, and for LAUSD, I mean, how difficult they made it for you and tried to undermine your success, we'd really appreciate that.
Well, I can tell you a couple of things, David. First of all, we are against no one. We are for healthier food. So we are a non-contentious group, and we are trying to do everything through the word of good health and quality life for everyone. And this is, the bottom line, is a social justice issue. Everyone deserves to eat well in the public school system. That being said, the meetings were mind-numbing, in my opinion. We were given a lot of history that we really didn't need. There's a lot of lamenting going on the 28th floor. There's a lot of, oh, but we only have this much money, but oh, we have to use this vendor, and this recipe is the one the kids like, and we have to test the recipe. So there's a lot of repetition of, you know, going to the meetings again and again and hearing the same things over and over again. So that, and being a highly active person, that was very difficult for me. Secondly, when we started getting closer to things, like in January, we said, okay, let's focus. We're not going to get all of our needs met. We had a very list of simple needs: less trash, water accessibility to all the kids, no sugar beverages of any kind, more whole fruits, very, very less and more plant-based protein. So it was very basic. January rolled around, and they're saying, okay, well, we have new vendors and new menus, and things are going well. We focused in on chocolate milk, or flavored milk. Then the next month, we had a little sugar rally. You know, David Binkle said, Deputy Dave Binkle from LAUSD said, he said, I have plenty of parents that don't want to give up chocolate milk. If you have parents that want to, then you need to show me. I said, okay, we'll show you. So we staged a little rally outside of the Beaudry building on the Visconti lawn at the next Cafeteria Improvement Committee meeting, which was February 14th. So we created Jugs of Love, which was a gallon sugar jar, a gallon milk jug. We filled it with sugar because that's the amount of sugar a child will take in if they drink chocolate milk at breakfast and lunch, which is just a crazy amount of sugar for a little 6-year-old to be taking in on a yearly basis. Mm-hmm. And we had probably 50 people show up, and we were going to come to the Cafeteria Improvement Committee meeting. Mm-hmm. So the first thing we get, and they knew, I said, David, we're going to bring you the parents. We're going to come with love. We want to show you that we mean business. That earlier in the morning, we got an email that they're changing the time of the meeting. Then we get another email, they're changing the location of the meeting. And then an hour before the rally, which was an hour before the Cafeteria Improvement Committee, they canceled the meeting.
Wow. Well, it sounds like they're really, really busy doing, I don't know what, but, you know, your meeting has to take a backseat. Now, let me ask you something. Do you think if there was an open bidding process for LAUSD that you would have this problem? For example, if, let's say, they had more than one food vendor and competing. In other words, they're not just dealing with Cisco or whoever it is they're getting their food supply from. Would that help in you know, level the playing field as it was?
I mean, they tried to do that this year. They tried to open it up so that they have more local and smaller vendors. How successfully they did that, I'm not really sure. David asked me to sit in on the procurement vetting process, and he handed me a schedule with over 50 hours worth of meetings on it and said, can you do this? And I'm just like, no, I can't do that. I have a job. I work. I can't do this in the next 2 weeks. So in a way, they've opened it up. But honestly, I think it comes down to, again, money and nutrition education. I sat in one of the last meetings I sat in, David had to explain to the nutritionist of LAUSD what a processed food was.
Wow, and that was the nutritionist, huh?
The nutritionist.
Wow.
Yeah.
What? I was going to say, wow, that's unheard of, but maybe it's not.
But when you have someone who is used to having processed food at every meal, they're not thinking of it as a bad thing. They're thinking of it as a normal thing.
That's true. Now, the process, the cleaning up, you know, no pun intended on it, cleaning up the food that we serve in LAUSD also kind of sounds to me very similar to, like, the textbook obligations that LAUSD has. Like, I don't know, if you're dealing with McGraw-Hill, then you cannot get books from Glencoe or one of these other publishers because contractually you've signed away rights to exclusively deal with that vendor. I've always disagreed with that because once you get one vendor giving you one product, I mean, you're kind of fixed in that. And that person, it's monopolizing the business, and it undermines the competitiveness, you know? I mean, we have to be stuck with a certain textbook, just like we have to be stuck with chocolate milk or strawberry milk. And people can put in preservatives and sugars and chemicals, mm-hmm. and there's nothing we could do about it. Mm-hmm. So my question to you is, do you think that what we really need to do is advocate that LAUSD open up its bidding process across the board, not just with the food, but, you know, with vendors for classroom materials as well?
Yeah, I think that would be a great idea. I just don't think it's feasible. I think for the food, I mean, the bottom line is a lot of the food we get comes down from contracts that have started in Washington, D.C. and the dairy board, you know, and the big four meat producers. So it isn't transparent. The food budget isn't transparent. They'll quote you lots of numbers about, oh, we're spending this much on produce and we only spent this much last year, but it's still not two-thirds of the budget, the way the plate's supposed to be two-thirds vegetables.
Uh-huh. You know, it's interesting because Mark and I, before you had called, were talking about how we believe the federal government is a majority part of the problem for public education, even here in Los Angeles. And so, I mean, we didn't coax you to mention that the federal government is the one that is doing these negotiations. You said that on your own accord, right?
I did indeed. I did indeed. Well, it's the truth.
Yeah.
It's the truth. I mean, dairy, and the bottom line is our kids don't need milk. And you will never hear that. I mean, in Australia, they had the Australian Dairy Board take their milk commercials off the air because it was not truthful.
But Jennifer, if we don't have our kids drinking milk, where are they going to get their growth hormone from?
Right. Thank you.
Jenny, can you hear me?
Exactly.
No, she can't.
Exactly. Where are they going to get their phlegm from if they don't drink milk, you know?
Well,
where are they going to get their colds from?
Well, one thing I would add to this, and not that it's that pertinent, is that it's common biological knowledge that human primates, after the age of weaning, let's say approximately 13 months, really don't need milk. Now, I'm not saying you shouldn't drink milk. I'm just saying we really no longer need milk.
You don't need it.
Yes. I mean, we're the only, primates who continue to consume it.
Yeah. No, and I was a milk pusher for a very long time. I have three kids, and my food education has come a long way. I mean, I raised my daughters on McNuggets and pizza, you know, so it's my evolution. They're 26 and 25 now, so that was a long time ago. But I've come a long way with the knowledge that is out there about our food science and our food system. And when I stopped pushing milk, my kids stopped getting sick.
Well, I have to confess that I'm still a big advocate of casein, the primary protein in milk, so I'm not giving up on it. But I've heard various arguments from the people who believe that milk takes a huge jump forward in its value if you're drinking not just organic but raw milk.
Raw milk. It has to be raw milk. But who can afford it?
Tell me about it.
It's $6 a half gallon.
You know, that's amazing, too, because I can recall in the 70s, and I know that says a lot about me, which I'd rather not.
I was there, too. Don't be embarrassed.
All right. But I used to go into markets, and I'd find Altadena there before they were harassed so much that they rarely circulate any raw products anymore. And buying raw milk was a marginal expense because it was only slightly higher than, the major line. So,
right.
But not now. Now it's part of the gold standard of dairy products.
Yeah, I don't know who can afford it. Yeah.
Yeah, and then if you want to go to the extreme end of this, which is that group of people who say not only does it have to be raw, but it has to be goat's milk because that most closely approximates the configuration of human milk.
And you know what I have to say, David?
Drink water. Oh, you're speaking to Mark right now.
Oh, hi, Mark. Drink water. I mean, seriously.
Well, I would go along with that, except my fondness for milk.
I see. You're one. Yeah, I know.
You know, and I'm lucky enough that I don't have any problems with it. It doesn't present me with any issues, whereas there are quite a few people, at least by my personal experience, that do.
Tell her we're not milk fascists.
Oh, yeah, we're not milk fascists.
No, me neither. Me neither.
Yeah, I'm not going to, go out there, just like I'm not going to, dress like one of those foster farm chickens that they use in the ads. But there are certain things that we develop as a proclivity.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And there are ranges in the quality of milk. I mean, there are those companies that, one, offer you hormone-free milk and in containers in which they don't transfer estrogen-like polycarbonates.
Right, right.
Yeah, there is some range, some flux there. But, essentially, yeah, you're right.
Well, and there's also a standard industry practice with chocolate milk to use the milk that's past expiration because you can't taste the funk in it as much.
Oh yeah, masks, perfect. Yeah, that.
Let's give that to the kids and then send them to class. Yeah, that's a good idea.
That reminds me of those old revelations about when they were selecting meat for dog food and cat food production, that most of the time they not only discarded the most undesirable portions of the meat, but a good share of those portions, it was questionable as to what was growing on them.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, they actually had footage of it. I saw it where they were chopping off parts of a cut of meat that you're looking at that and saying, is that just mold or is it cancer?
Yeah,
it didn't really.
Yeah,
it wasn't too encouraging.
Oh, God.
And of course, when you get to beef, and I'm sure we're talking about other animals too. Primarily, when they do the hormone boosting, they use estrogen because they're looking to put on weight. It's not just they're loading them up with androgens because they want the meat to be leaner and firmer. No, the quickest way to get them to grow is with estrogen.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Wonderful. Yeah. Makes me want to go out to McDonald's right now.
All right, doesn't it? A healthy McDonald's. They're putting fruit on the menu. Have you heard?
Yeah.
Okay, then. Fast food is okay.
Yeah, I'm still trying to take this seriously.
Yeah, McDonald's is serving apples. The world has changed. Yeah, give me a break.
Yeah.
Apples altered with human DNA or something.
Yeah, that's like getting a salad and putting 3 tablespoons of mayonnaise on it.
Yep, exactly.
And still claiming that you're cutting back on calories.
Sure enough.
I shouldn't say that. I like mayonnaise, too. But
I love mayonnaise.
Yeah, really. Well, we all have our own vices on this anyway. Well, I want to thank you for calling in. And one other thing, too. Don't forget us. We're here on Kill Radio. I'm also associated with PerDaily.com, which is, for the most part, dedicated to the same subjects. And we on PerDaily, we're trying our best to interact with the food revolution. And, of course, the reality of that is that you don't go directly to the food revolution. You start with people like yourself.
Well, and, yeah, it's not going to be one person that changes this. It's going to be because we all came together as a community and said we're not going to take it anymore. So the more I can educate and instill in people that we are worth good, healthy, fresh, affordable food, the better.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that in spite of my fondness for certain things that aren't that good, I'm still absolutely on your side. Getting kids off and going to school well-nourished is...
Well-nourished, yeah.
I mean, if you're not going to do that, how do you expect them to pay attention?
Please. It's shocking to me, yeah.
Yeah, and you know, people always... I always hear this complaint. I see them dumping most of it in the trash bins. Those are the most well-fed garbage cans in California. Yeah, they are, because if you look at what they're being given to eat, you would see that as its final destination, too.
Well, that's a whole other show. There's no family-style service in LAUSD. Everything is prepackaged. The amount of waste that they're producing is just off the charts disgusting.
Oh yeah. And let me tell you a difference, too, that most people aren't aware of. The district has, not gradually, but in a dramatic sense, cut back severely on the number of food service employees it has. And, you know, that has to have an impact because, at best, things are warmed up. Nothing is cooked anymore inside of a school cafeteria.
Exactly.
Now, when I started in Southern California in the early 80s, you could go to even a high school like Fremont and... Not only was the food cooked, there was an independent menu there for the staff and on which any number of specialty foods were cooked that don't appear on a normal school menu.
Yeah, the staff menu, yeah.
And those were very popular cafeterias. People were absolutely willing to go in there and spend their money because they were getting pretty decent food.
Well, the whole, you know, basically, we haven't invented anything since 1930 regarding food that has excelled our health, but that doesn't mean we haven't that the nature of America is not to is to try to improve things. So we have gone so far off the charts into feeding our American public crap, and the American public is right there buying it that the correction curve is going to take decades, and it's going to take a lot of people like me out there helping with nutrition education because people are so caught up and so disinterested in food until they realize that it's pay the doctor or pay the farmer, you know, make the choices early.
Well, a surprising number of people don't want to pay a little more for better food, and consequently, without meaning to be, you're a de facto advocate for corporate farming.
Exactly. That's exactly what it means. Yeah.
And you know that's sad because, I grew up in a farming community.
Me too.
And I already know what the quality of produce can be as opposed to what I see here.
Exactly. Me too. That's part of the reason I think I'm so fired up about this because, you know, My uncle was a gentleman farmer. We picked our pig, you know, for our Easter dinner. We grew our turkey for our Thanksgiving.
Oh, so did we. In fact, my grandmother kept that in her backyard for about anywhere from 6 weeks to 2 months.
Exactly.
Oh, one of those enormous black, I don't remember the variety of it, turkeys. And when it was...
there was one variety. It was called a turkey.
Yeah, but we also had the unpleasantness of terminating the turkey so we could do everything else that went with it. But, yeah, that was nothing unusual back then.
That's part of it. I think that's really important to know where your food comes from, is that you are killing an animal to eat that, you know, and you need to be – how often can you do that? If you had to kill a chicken every day to eat it, would you eat chicken every day?
Well, you know, the thing is, too, when you have to do that, you don't waste anything.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. But we're going back to a time when any neighborhood was full of gardens. I mean, huge gardens. People just raised their own produce.
Well, and that's why the garden, the Revolution Garden, the Master Gardeners, the Victory Gardens, that really, really helps with the schools and the nutrition education, because once a child sees a plant come out of the garden, they have the opportunity to cook it and eat it. There's pride of ownership. There's stewardship in the earth. They're excited. Their taste buds are tingled in a way that they never thought before was possible. And all of a sudden, their world opens up.
Oh yeah. In fact, I don't know if it still exists, but we used to have a program, the Nutrition Network in LA Unified. And what they did is they supplied produce. 1 week it could be vegetables, the next week it could be fruit, but whatever was in season. But the difference was this. It was top quality produce. And the kids would look at that and say to themselves, my God, this is what apples are really like?
Yeah, they still have it. You'll be glad to hear. It's called Produce of the Month. And it's instead of Health Network, well, we used to call it Nutrition Network. Now it's Network for a Healthy California, and they're still doing it. And I recommend that every person who hears this, who has a school, asks for that program in their school. One of the teachers, usually the school nurse, but, you know, they're kind of hard to find anymore, has to go for like a two-hour training, and then you can get the produce delivered. And then me, for instance, I'll be working with Mikkel Terena this year with their Produce of the Month. We're going to do after-school nutrition classes for the parents. And we're going to do cooking classes in the garden. So with the, you know, the Harvest of the Month, that's what it's called, Harvest of the Month. But that's available to all LAUSD schools.
Well, there's still plenty of schools that if they don't have an actual garden, they have the remnants of one. So, I mean, it hasn't completely drifted into non-existence.
Yeah, you don't have to have a garden to do Harvest of the Month. No, that's my point, is that anyone can do it. It's just great to have that garden hook up.
Oh, yeah. That's absolutely for certain. It's, I know you're promoting community gardens and things along those lines, too. But, it varies from community to community as to land availability and things along those lines.
Well, and then with community, we get ownership of and a sense of place of where we are. And that's the only thing that's going to really change how we start, you know, grassroots demand for changing our food system.
Oh, well, I think you're absolutely right. But we both know this is a David and Goliath.
Oh, my God, it is. Is it ever? Yeah.
I mean, how many ads do you see watching just normal programming that are geared toward one of the big names in fast food preparation?
It hurts me every time I see it, and it's constant.
Yeah.
And they're all deceptive. I mean, there's one now with the cornfields, and there's people walking through the cornfields. You can't walk through a cornfield anymore. It's all GMO. The only thing they can get through there is a machine, is because they grow it so close together.
Yeah, I don't think people understand that when you get to crops like corn and soy, they're all GMO. They're all genetic.
All of them. Corn, alfalfa, wheat, and soy, yeah.
And we have no studies on the long-term effects of those foods.
We're the only country in the world that said, okay, let's try it.
Yeah, everyone else rejected it.
Everyone else said, no, let's see what happens.
Yeah, so
and here, this is what made me just fall in a pile of disgust and wretched crying last week. We are now, Obama agreed to let Monsanto grow GMO crops on refuge land so that we could have more exports.
My God.
I know. So they're taking all those GMOs and putting them into the wilderness.
And you know those stories, which aren't really stories, about farmers who are still using the traditional methods, who are near those farms, and, you know, any of the seeds drift over or something like that, they're held accountable.
It's not stories. But yeah, it's ridiculous. And how, I mean, these guys are gangsters. I don't know how they're getting away with it. It just makes me so angry.
Oh, hold on here. David wants to say something else here.
You know, Jennifer, I just wanted to say the way they're getting away with it is the same way they're getting away with compromising public education, and as I said earlier, the same way they're going to want to implement a charter model privatization in the L.A. Zoo. They're getting away with it because we're letting them get away with it. I mean, we as a community are far too passive. We're allowing this to happen, and I think that the only thing that we need to do is we need to mobilize together, and you know what? Education and food nutrition, We go hand in hand. We go hand in hand with the anti-war movement. We go hand in hand with the fact that these kids are getting a compromised education. You know, it all relates back to the federal government, which is pontificating or you know, putting an edict out there, and then the rest of us have to follow, rather than leading the people based on what the people want. And instead of just sitting here, I mean, we really, really need to mobilize together as a community and say, no, we've had enough.
I agree. That's my hope at Mikkel Terrain, is that I can get, because it's largely a Latino, South American parent school, and I'm hoping that I can really bridge the, you know, the gap from the white people to the Latino community to say, come on, this is not okay. Let's all get together here and make this change, you know? I really... I'm hoping it sort of moves out of the elite white genre that the food revolution is right now.
You know, I think you have good opportunities for that. I mean, I live in Gardena, and in the surrounding area there are a number of fairly substantial Latino markets. And you go into those, and for one thing, they're not going to have any frozen meat.
Any frozen what?
They're not going to have any frozen meat.
Really?
Yeah, they want everything fresh.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, and if you're buying a specialty food like, for instance, like sausage, like chorizo, chances are they're going to make it right there.
Yeah, but that's all factory farm meat. That's not about the meat.
Yeah, there are limitations on it for sure.
Well, that's my whole thing. I think that you can turn any diet into a healthy diet if you just educate yourself about what's available and what's seasonal. I think so many people don't know how to make the change, so they go back to foods that are, you know, unfortunately traditional, but that's what they know, so that's where they stay. And then, you know, we all have this metabolic syndrome in our bellies and carry around that extra tire, and then we get diabetes and asthma and take a pill and think it's going to be okay.
Yeah, and that stuff is held in your tissues for so long.
Uh-huh, yeah.
It's not like it just automatic. There is no cleansing diet that just wipes it out. You can have all the high colonics you want. It's not going to just clear you out and, oh, you're ready to go.
Yeah. Now you can go pile on some more. Yeah. So, yeah, you know, it's their lifestyle changes. Yeah. They're big. It's big.
Yeah. Yeah. That's it. It's not one of those things you get to do for a month or 6 weeks. No, this is pretty much a lifelong commitment.
Yeah, it is. It is. So it's a matter of making it a priority, which so many people don't. And demanding change. I'm with you on that one, David.
Well,
and Mark, I know, but that was David.
Well, I'm certainly glad you called in, and I hope that you won't forget us over here at Kill Radio, and that you know you're always welcome here, and that we can pick you up on perdaily.com too.
Oh, awesome! I will. I'll keep you posted. As I said, I'm enjoying my summer right now, but back and once I jump in again in September and get all my troops rallied, we'll definitely be in touch.
That sounds more than cool.
Thank you, gentlemen. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
Pleasure speaking to you, and have yourself a great day.
You too, Mark. Bye-bye.
I know.
Dave, can you wrap it up for us? We're about the 5 minutes left on the show.
Sure. Thank you very much, Mark, for letting me have the final thoughts here. I feel like Jerry Springer with his final thought, you know. But no, on the serious note, you know, I'm grateful that Jennifer called. I'm grateful that Mark was able to have her as a guest call-in speaker. You know, what I really, really would want is somehow the food revolution, I believe, is directly related to education and directly related to our cause here at Kill Radio and directly related to Mark and Leonard Eisenberg's efforts on perdaily.com. I think that what we need to do is we need to all kind of unify somehow, and we need to bring in the community, but collaborating together to fight what's going on. Monsanto, you know, compromising our food by putting, genetically altering tomatoes or corn or whatever it's doing, and then us eating that. That has to be illegal. You know, that should be banned. And yet our government representatives have not said anything about it. You know, and the reason why is because we allow them to get away with that. And I want to say that enough. You know, because this is Teacher Talk, it's based on education. So I'm going to say what we need to do is we need to start to fight against this, you know, movement to marginalize the working class and its voice. And I think that the way we can do that is, again, I want to give you guys the phone number. I want you to call. I'll call. You can tell them you heard it from Mark Hemphill and David Garcia right here on killradio.org. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, her office phone number is area code 202-647-5291. Secretary Arnold Duncan, the Secretary of Education, his phone number is area code 202-401-300. And as a matter of fact, I also happen to have Secretary of Education Arnold Duncan's email address for those of you that are interested in emailing him. That would be arnie.duncan@ed.gov. Now let me spell it for you. It's arnie.duncan@ed.gov. You know, you need to contact these people, and you need to tell them, you know, we are very unsatisfied with the poor food choices in our schools. We are very disappointed in the lack of leadership in this country. And we want something done about it. We want our voices represented, or come next election time, you guys are going to be out of a job. We need to all say that together. It can't just be Mark and I here, you know, trying to stir the troops. I mean, we've got it. We're in this together. And either we make the social changes needed to be together as a community, or honestly, Mark and I are just going to be here like two people on a wailing wall yelling for revolution and no one listening to us. So I think it's very important that we get the word out there. Call Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, call Arnold Duncan, and let them know how you feel, and let them know what's being done. And again, I don't really care if you tell them. Tell them David Garcia and Mark Hemphill here on killradio.org in Los Angeles have urged you to call and tell them that we need change, we need real reform. And real reform is not top-down, you know, pontification. Real reform is taking the advice of teachers in the actual classroom, because we're the experts and we know what our students need. And with that, I got to be quiet because Mark's kind of like looking at me. So I thank you guys. I'll let Mark take over right here. He'll lead us with some words of wisdom.
Okay, David, you're certainly welcome to finish up on anything you started today, next week. Otherwise, I do encourage you to use those numbers, just like I encourage you to use that email address I gave you earlier in the show. FMARTIN6@yahoo.com. If you want a copy of that saved DVD, I haven't nailed down our speaker for next week. There are several people that are very interesting, ranging from more of the food revolution people to people who represent social justice. We'll see which one of them shows up, but I want to thank all of you for listening. And this is Teacher Talk on Kill Radio, signing off.